This is Chad Weckler. I'm interviewing Rob Perry, who's the superintendent of our Hudson Department of Public Works. And we'll get into some of the details of what that is. And first, we'll start off with Rob Perry. Where does Rob Perry come from?
Rob Perry comes from family members up in the Glens Falls area. We moved to Claverick when I was 3 months old. Although I was raised in the Taconic Hills District, I went to school in Hudson because both my parents were teachers in the Hudson City School District. After that, I finished high school, went to Columbia Green for 2 years, St. John Fisher College for 2 years, and the University of Hartford for 2 years, getting associate's, bachelor's, and master's degrees, all in business. I was a nursing home administrator at the beginning of my career, moved from that industry to some other ones, eventually going into project management. While I was in project management, working with data centers and 911 centers and so forth, I was also chairman of the planning commission. Then I ran and was elected president of the Common Council, at which point there was a conversation between Mayor Scalera and myself about I was looking for another project management job and interviewing. And he said, if you're interviewing for another job, why don't you consider superintendent of public works? I thought he was kidding. But after that, you know, we looked into it. We had some other discussions, and, you know, 98% of this job is project management. It's making sure that the needs of the city are addressed in a timely and, of course, you know, cost-effective manner. So it's what I'd been doing for years, and I was happy to take the dive, and I've loved every day since.
And here in Hudson, what are the responsibilities of your department?
We have the Department of Public Works itself has four major departments within it. There's the water department. That consists of about 15 miles of transmission main, which brings water from the mountains out by the old forge, State Forest, in Taconic. From there, it goes to a reservoir we have, which is a 80 million gallon reservoir, and then it continues its way into the plant that we have on top of Academy Hill, the Mount Ray plant, where it's stored, and then it goes into the system from there. The distribution system, we have probably 30 miles of pipe throughout the city, bringing water to 2,000 plus families, schools, other institutions, and businesses. That's the water department. We have a brand new $10 million water treatment plant that was built from 2005 to 2007. We also operate, maintain the cemetery, which is 88 acres of, cemetery. Since the first internment, I believe there's been about 25,000 internments. That's, you know, a 200 plus year history in Hudson. We average about 20 internments a month. And, we currently are actually having a sale on plots. We're hoping that some of the newer people that have moved to Hudson will look at the long-term, you know, possibility of buying plots here and choosing this to be their final resting place. We take great pride in what we can do. Obviously, that budget is the tightest budget that we have. The sewer isn't, tax dollars don't go towards the sewer, to the cemetery operations. What happens is we need the fees from sales of plots and internments to cover those operations. The another department is obviously the sewer department. We just completed a $12.5 million construction of a new 17 million gallon a day plant. You know, it's a very impressive site. We were out of compliance for a number of years. We now have the capability and are in compliance, which, you know, we're hoping will be the beginning of the discussions that we have with the DEC to have our consent order lifted. Once that consent order is lifted, we hope to start bringing amounts, certain large quantities of septic waste in from private haulers so that we can offset the debt service with commercial money from businesses not within the city of Hudson that want to use our services. So the water, sewer, and cemetery are unique in the fact that they each have their own specific fund, which means that the monies that come in their operations are come from fees. There aren't any tax dollars. There's nothing, no prep. Any amount that you pay in property taxes doesn't go to these departments. These departments are self-sustaining based on their own fees. That is not true for the fourth department, which is the DPW, Department of Public Works. That includes sanitation, which is the refuse, and also the recycling. That is our parks. There are about 50 properties that we maintain, which is shovel the sidewalks, mow lawns, that are just small little pocket parks or parcels that are owned by either Hudson Development Corporation or Hudson Community and Development. Those are the non-government agencies that are closely linked to the city. You know, the street cleaning, we have 30 miles of street. You know, there are the street maintenance, which is, you know, making repairs to streets. Most of the repairs that we make are a direct result of our work and the fact that we've had to repair water breaks or sewer sinkholes or some other infrastructure issue. So that's the, you know, that's the gist of the day.
Well, when you mentioned parks, are you sort of the parks department?
Well, we absolutely are the parks department. I mean, all of the parks under the charter, section 22-7, parks fall under the discretion of the Commissioner of Public Works, and I work directly and report directly to the Commissioner of Public Works. So, yes, we have you know, responsibility for basically all, also the property manager for the city. Mm-hmm. So although the police department has its own budget, we're responsible for maintaining the buildings and grounds around it. We, you know, the same with the daycare, the same with the courts building, the same with the city hall.
Washington Hose also.
Yes, now Washington Hose. When it was a fire, the fire department's responsible for their own facilities, but as soon as it ceased to become a fire department, then yes, I inherited that too.
When you talk about the streets, you're talking about during the winter snow removal and also street cleaning. What's involved and why do you do street cleaning almost on a daily basis?
We do street cleaning on a daily basis for a number of reasons. One, certainly it used to be a full-time job. They had a less efficient street sweeper, and there was one person, and their job was strictly to work from midnight till 8 o'clock in the morning and drive throughout the city and keep the streets clean. The first reason, certainly there's an appearance pride, you know, public health issue. We don't want garbage and junk cluttering up the streets. The second is a environmental conservation issue. We have what's referred to as a combined sanitary system, which means that not only do the sewer mains carry the sewer from everyone's house and business, but it also carries the water from the catch basins that are along the street. So for every pound of garbage or every ton of garbage that we pick up during street cleaning, that's 1 pound or 1 ton of garbage or stone or muck that doesn't make its way into the collection system. Everything that makes its way into the collection system causes wear and tear on the collection system, which means it increases our maintenance and operation costs. And ultimately, it ends up in the plant, which means there's more process involved with, you know, mechanical operations, potentially chemical operations to disinfect. And whatever we don't get makes its way into the river. So I make it very clear to people that the less that we clean the streets, the more we'll be polluting the river. And I find that unacceptable, and I'm sure most other people would agree.
Explain briefly that system of sewer and sewage. When everything hits the pipes, you might say, what happens after that?
Well, we have smaller mains. Obviously, everybody's house is connected to, they're required by code to be connected to our sewer through their own service connection. So there are thousands of service connections that make their way to the mains. Obviously, the further away you are from the plant, the smaller the mains are. As they come closer and they merge, then the structures become bigger, the mains become bigger. You know, in the outskirts of the city, we may have, you know, 10 and 12 inch mains. You know, down here, the main influent is a 30 inch main, but there's some structures that are 4 feet and greater tall. You know, they're rectilinear. So the newer mains, obviously, that we're putting in today are plastic. The mains or any improvements that were put in maybe in the last 30 years, they might be either a combination of plastic or mostly they're tile, clay tile. The older ones than that are actually laid up stone. I mean, you know, the infrastructure that we have here, the sewers that they built when the city was first being settled and growing, is the same technology that, you know, that the Egyptians were using. I mean, it's just stone archways that are laid up. There's no mortar in between them. And there's, oak boards. And there's, even after that, they started using, they had full-time masons that would actually do structures that were brick, and they did use mortar for, in those instances. So, you know, we open a manhole, we're, you know, it's never the same thing twice, that's for sure.
And when that all makes its way here at the plant, what happens?
Once it comes into the plant, the first thing that takes, the first process is screenings. That's taking out the large things, the rags, the sticks, the bricks, the large stones. You know, some solids do make their way up, but they're screened out and put back into suspension so they can be treated later in the process. You know, the first step in screenings is just taking out the things that could do the most damage to the pumps. These are expensive pumps. The next process is taking out the grit, which is the smaller stone pebbles. Those have to settle out. They are then pumped over to a conveyor and put into a dumpster where they're just disposed of with the sludge hauling. After that, we go into primary settling, which is basically the solids that were flushed down the toilet, that were pureed through the system. You know, they're heavier than water, so they settle out to the bottom, and flights kind of rake them back and into a hopper, so that way they can be pumped and broken down further. The rest of the bulk of the water then makes its way up to some further treatment. Some air is added to it so that the bugs that are remaining can eat the food and break it down, and our waste is their food. And then it goes through another clarification process, and then hit with chlorine, and then out it goes where it's disinfected, and then it makes its way into the Hudson River, which is our receiving body.
Would you say the sewage system that is here in Hudson probably is your largest portion of what you do?
Well, it certainly has been for the last couple of years, because we just completed a $12.5 million construction project. As far as work in the roads, yeah, we're going to be doing some, we're under a 20-year plan to separate as the storm lines from the sewer lines, so that way stormwater will go directly to the river without being mixed with sanitary sewers. That's good in the fact that what happens is the water from the catch basins actually gets dirtier by mixing with the sewer than it would be if it just went to the river straight away with just, you know, some dirt and suspension. So we'll be doing projects like that on Hudson Avenue, around Union Street this summer. And it's been a bit of a change in focus to get my guys where they used to be more in a reactive stance. Now I'm trying to get them to be proactive, and they're doing a wonderful job. I can't say enough about the talent that's here. These guys can really do anything if they're given the right equipment and the right materials, which I've made it my first goal to do those things. And then we sit down and we work through these projects, and they've been very open to it, because let's face it, they enjoy doing a good job and seeing some benefit from their work as well.
How many employees do you have?
Between all four departments, there's probably around 25 full-time. You know, that includes some clerical, and obviously there's foremen, and there's plant operators, and then there's the guys that are actually out on the street. We do have a number of part-timers that come into the cemetery for summer hours for mowing the lawns. But usually anywhere around 25 to 30 employees working.
What's the new building that you're involved with? I guess that's through the sanitation system that's near the Amtrak station. Is that a pumping station?
That is a pump station. As part of this construction project, there was two deficiencies that DEC had found, which was the basis for their consent order. The two prime ones were, one, that we weren't handling the flow limits. We were, the old plant, we were required to do 17 million gallons, and we're lucky if we did half that. So that was at the plant. But there was a problem with the pump station down by the Amtrak lot that was supposed to convey 5 million gallons, and that was only conveying 2.5 million. So as part of this project, that plant was upgraded, that pump station was upgraded, and a new force main was put in Front Street. So yes, that's new, and that's me.
When you do your responsibilities of maintaining the city-owned properties, and I would, as I recall, the city hall is one of them, and you had to do some work on the roof?
Well, the roof has been, as is the case with many of our buildings, there's any number of disasters, in terms of not in terms of physical harm, but just in terms of, you know, costly repairs that are needed. There, it's an old inventory, and there's been, you know, patches done for many years. And the roof of City Hall was one of those prime examples that was, you know, patched and patched and patched and patched and patched. You know, with Hurricane Irene, the sheer magnitude of water that went over one day, it was just too much for the frail roof. And so we had drop ceiling collapse in offices upstairs, and, you know, some of the plaster came down. So it became an issue that just, you know, its time had come. So we had quotes in hand. We executed one of the contracts, and the new roof was put on for $32,000. It's now a rubber roof. Sorry. Just trying to think of these projects. So that roof is done.
So your management skills definitely is required for the many things that your department does.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously there's money management. You know, I mean, I'm responsible for doing four separate budgets, one for each of the departments, the main departments. I'm also held accountable to stay within them. Certainly there are things that are, you know, unexpected, and we try and absorb those unexpecteds within our own budget. But in the case of the roof and things that went wrong, we went to elsewhere to get monies in the budget because, you know, it's still the responsibility of the city overall to make sure that each of its entities has what it needs. So that's what took place.
Going back to some of the Parks Department responsibilities that you have, you go up and down streets, you take care of the trees, overgrown bushes, you go into the parks, you mow. What else might you want to describe about that responsibility?
Well, I mean, you pretty much summarize what it is. I mean, it's, you know, our guys are doing the maintenance, keeping it clean, picking up the garbage that's in there, keeping the lawns mowed, keeping the bushes trimmed. I know it's, you know, we've been the butt of a lot of jokes. The fact that there's a, you know, they're not, you know, very careful when it comes to doing hedges. You know, they may be a little too close. I don't know. I mean, the fact of the matter is these guys are wonderful. It is one of my greatest pleasures to work with these guys on a daily basis. But, you know, many of them, almost none of them went to college, and many of them didn't even graduate high school. They do what I need them to do. They do to the best of their ability, but unfortunately they're not topiarists or arborists. You know, we try and are cognizant of overall aesthetics and things of that nature, but they have limits, and that's the reality, as we're trying to do what we can with the crews and the abilities that we have.
But you're also using a lot of their other talents to do other things. You're very proud of your employees, and some of the things that you've done are signs, for instance. That's another area that you do, putting signs throughout Hudson when needed.
Yeah, when it comes to signage, I mean, basically our responsibility is we're the guys who stick them in the ground. different signs have different regulations and, you know, different jurisdictions. Obviously, traffic control signs are under the oversight of the police commissioner. Various signs of all with parks and things like that are somewhere in the LWRP. Some are just, you know, there's zoning regulations for some signs. But usually we're just the guys that will coordinate with the sign manufacturer, and like I said, we usually end up just installing them. As we do with most things, we're the ones that usually take the ideas, the concepts, and turn them into something material.
I mean, you're a very proud Hudsonian. Been here a long time. You work with a lot of your employees are from here. And since you deal with a lot of residences and businesses, is there something that you would like to ask them in a way of how they may be able to help you in all the different hats that you wear to make things work?
I don't know that there's really anything I could ask. Everybody's in this together. The harder it is for my guys to do their job, the less other work that can get done. You know, I take more of a public servant perspective in this. And my goal with a perfect example is take water and sewer. I mean, if people get up in the day and brush their teeth and take a shower and use water for cooking and laundry, and it all goes away, and they don't put an ounce of thought into how the water came in, is the water safe, and where did it go, then I'm doing my job. And that's the way I'm I'm not looking for anybody to make my job necessarily easier. I certainly don't want them to make it harder. But they have to understand that each individual homeowner is part of a community. And it's not about you as an individual. It's about us as a group. And, you know, as long as the focus is there and that we can, you know, we can certainly disagree, but I don't have a problem with that. It comes with the territory. But, you know, you have to be aware that, you know, my responsibilities are largely citywide. And that's usually where I make my decisions based on what is better for the whole.
The streets in Hudson, I would imagine under every street there are sewer pipes. There are water mains. A lot of pipes. It must be very expensive. Let's upgrade all the sewer. Let's upgrade everything else. What are the potential costs that you deal with?
Well, I mean, a perfect example is we just put 1,200 feet of water main on Green Street, and that project cost $300,000. We just put 2,000 feet of force main and some gravity sewer and some storm line in Front Street as part of this project. That contract was about $800,000. So, you know, you're talking about these projects were thousands of feet, you know, a tenth of a mile, a quarter of a mile in total distance. And you're talking about 30 miles of sewer line, maybe 40 miles. So clearly the cost of doing a project or of upgrading and replacing these would be absolutely staggering. That's why we try and do what work we can with our own crews. We pick a couple hundred feet of storm line or, you know, a couple hundred feet or 1,000 feet of water main, things like that to do in-house, you know, valve upgrades to have our guys do that internally, which is what they did last year. They did it during the night, so that way people would be less impacted by the scheduled shutdown of main so they could do their work. The goal is to do more and more with what we have internally because we just don't have the ability to keep bonding all of these projects.
And also I'll interject the aesthetics. During, let's say, December, you're in charge of Santa's Village up in the 7th Street Park. You're also involved in putting the lights in the trees along Warren Street.
Yeah, it's a bit of an irony because I'm not the biggest fan of Christmas decorations. I don't even like to decorate my own house, and now I got to decorate a city. But we had, you know, the old decorations have been largely phased out because when we did the new streetlights, the old ones were incompatible. But in exchange, we decided to put more lights on the trees. You know, most people seem to think more positively about having the trees lit up than having those wreaths up. The wreaths would stay up through the Christmas season. They would have been down by now. But we choose, because the lights stay in the trees all year, we actually would leave them running for through February. Obviously, after February, there's more hours of daylight, and it's just a waste of electricity. But they're all high-efficiency bulbs. You know, it runs about $2,000 a month to keep the lights on. But, you know, in these cold, dark months, you know, I think Warren Street looks great. And as far as the village is the village. I mean, they're old buildings. I mean, my guys have put new roofs on them, changed out windows. A lot of the animatronics, if you want to call it that, you know, they're just old. The gears are worn down, and, you know, we do what we can to make them as functional. So they're kitschy, yeah. But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's, you know, they've been in place for 30-some-odd years. I'm okay with them. It's not that big of a deal. They're, you know, we show up with we put some fork extensions on our equipment, pick them up, put them on a trailer, bring them down to the garage where they get stored. The Opera House has extended a offer to kind of help tweak them up a little bit, clean them up, fix them up, put a little bit of artistic flair on them. Whatever, I'm okay. Listen, anybody who wants to volunteer, I'm happy. You know, we've met with them a couple times, and we told them we'd create a work area for them and help them as much as we can.
And the last issue that I'll approach is here it is. We're well past the mid part of January. Not a lot of snow, which is pretty unusual for this neck of the woods. And I'm thinking it's got to happen sooner or later when we do have another foot or more of snow. What would be your advice and also how to inform our residents and businesses about the snow that hits the city?
Well, when you're in the Northeast, you're in the snow business. That's the reality. Certainly, we have the equipment ready with the snow blowers and the plows, and we have the salt, and we have the budget in place for it. But really, I'm absolutely amazed and astounded when people are surprised that there's snow that's been forecasted. There's a foot of snow, and all of a sudden they have to move the car. The reality is our plows and our snow blower are absolutely useless, and our manpower is useless if cars are in the way. It's just that simple. We need the cars moved so that we can get through to do our job. And if the cars aren't moved and we can't do our job, then the police have a trouble getting through, and certainly the firefighters have almost no ability to get through. So it comes back to the fact that you're part of a community, and that your individual needs of not wanting to shovel the car is greatly overridden by the fact that for public safety, we need to maintain these roads and get them open. I am happy to see what one thing that happened last year is Sarah Sterling was now supervisor, then alderman, had said in one of the committee meetings that, you know, she and many of her neighbors were going around to different houses, knocking on doors, telling people that they needed to move their cars. And I said, great. I said, that's wonderful. I mean, that's what neighbors do. Neighbors, we seem to have lost a little bit of that. And I'm glad to see that it's coming back, that neighbors take a little bit of ownership over making sure that the people next to them, you know, don't suffer penalties because of maybe they were out of town or whatever else took place. That's the business reality, getting snow off the road. We need to have the cars out of the way.
And I'll be getting out of your way since you have another busy day. I want to thank Rob Perry, Superintendent of Public Works here in Hudson, and thank you very much for being with us on WGXC, our local community radio station.
Thanks, Chad.